Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we're continuing our conversation about the 160th commemoration of the Weeping Time in Savannah in March. We are going to talk with Chef Matthew Rayford, who is the owner of The Farmer and the Larder, but also the owner of Gilliard Farms in Brunswick, Georgia. Chef Matthew Rayford, welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am so glad that you are here because I love food. I think everyone already knows that. But tell our listeners about the concept for The Farmer and the Larder.
Oh, the concept for The Farmer and Larder. We are a culinary mixed youth space located in downtown Brunswick. The concept was built out of us being at Gilliard Farms and doing events there.
So you guys took the farm events and brought it downtown for a place.
Mm-hmm.
But tell our listeners about the food and the offerings from the farm and the restaurant.
Well, awesome. Well, we, Javon, my partner, she is a master herbalist. And so we do everything from making tea blends, growing our own hibiscus for our tea, to our various fresh herbs, vegetables. And we are actually doing more livestock now. So we have chickens right now. We're getting ready to add some more hogs. We're up to about 50. Then we took everything to the processor, and now we're getting ready to start back over again this spring.
And so this is a true farm-to-table offering from Gilliard Farms and Farmer in the Larder.
There you go. Yep. And what we don't have, we purchase from our local farmers as much as we possibly can. So the idea was to bring back what was originally done with the farm. I know you and I had spoke one time before. My great-great-grandfather was born 1812 as a slave in South Carolina. And he purchased 476 acres of land in 1874, just 8 years after the Civil War and Emancipation. So the land's been farmed ever since then in some shape, form, or fashion. And now, as a chef, I decided to come home and be a chef and farmer.
And you've shared that this is 7 generations of your family have farmed this same land in Brunswick, Georgia.
Actually, they have. I am the 6th, and my children are the 7th generation to have planted, harvested, and eaten from a crop on the land. So we're really excited about that and being able to pass down that knowledge from not just our local and what we do here in the southeast of Georgia, because we're a different zone than the rest of the state. We're zone 9A so far as planting goes. So we're usually about 10, 15 degrees warmer here than North Georgia.
And you all are a GMO sustainable farm. Could you share with our listeners exactly what that means?
Yes. Well, what we try our best to do is to ensure that we do not get any genetically modified seeds at all. We also do some seed saving at our farm. As a matter of fact, the hibiscus that we're growing right now or that we're getting ready to grow for this spring is from seed that we got from folks out of Louisiana that have been passed down there, then passed to us, and now we do seed saving also. So nothing has been modified. It's the original seed from the original plant from when it first started. And then we also try to make sure that none of our seeds are treated with any types of chemicals or anything like that. We make quite a bit of compost at the farm right now. We do everything from we use kind of the concept of green manure straw kind of a thing. But what we do is we use everything from wood chips to coffee grounds to fish scraps.
So this is food like historical food. This is food that our grandparents ate, not the food that you buy in the grocery store.
No. Yeah, definitely food that and the ways that those things were done. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we're going to do after the commemoration on March 2nd of the Weeping Time is we're going to leave Savannah and come to Gilliard Farm for a historically accurate lunch. Could you share?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I want you to share what that means, because I remember talking with you and Jovan, and you all were talking about the blueberries that are grown here in Georgia, in our state, more blueberries than any other fruit, but that the real native plant to Georgia was actually the huckleberry.
Yep, the southern huckleberry or the deerberry. So we have about, I think I stopped counting at about, and it grows wild. That's the other thing. It's a wild blueberry. And it's, I think I stopped counting at about 150 of those plants that are on our farm, just growing wild. And it's, I'll share a quick story with you. I was walking around the property and found what looked like a blueberry. And I happened to ask my grandmother, my Nana at the time when she was alive, I happened to say, hey, I was like, Nana, I was like, I found this plant and it looks like a blueberry. Did we ever plant blueberries here? She was like, no, baby, we ain't never planted no blueberries out here, but we did have something out here called a deerberry. And I was like, oh, okay. So I waited for them to change from the green into the blue. I brought her a handful of them, and she was like, where'd you find these berries? And I actually took her to where I found them, and come to find out that that was the original patch that when she was a kid that they would go and pick the deerberries from. And because it had been grown up for so long, they had just forgot about them even growing there. So we have a lot of that that's on the farm still. We do some wild harvesting of staghorn sumac and a couple other things, yaupon for tea and things like that. So what we're going to do for your event, though, is we're going to jump into some seafood, because it's still oyster season when you get up here, when you all get down here. And so we're going to do oysters on hot tin. We're going to do a low country boil with crab and corn and potatoes and sausages that are made right here locally and all of that good stuff. So we're excited about putting this all together for you all at the farm. And you all will be able to also see all the things that we're doing going into 2019.
I am so excited about this, and I have to share that I kind of cheated, because I came down to Brunswick for my birthday a couple of years ago, and you all prepared a wonderful oyster feast for me. And
definitely.
Chef Rayford, the funny part was my birthday this year, I had people reach out, so are we going to Brunswick again?
Yes, you all are. You all are coming to Brunswick again. And you all are going to have a good time. You all are going to have a great time at the farm, great time eating. Some of my family still lives out there, so you all get to meet some of them also.
And the food is so very good. You all did a coleslaw with native peanuts from Georgia that I had never seen before. I've never seen that preparation before. And when I want to share, it was one of the things that was fought over when we got to back to Atlanta in the van, was the last box of coleslaw. You know, that was one of the things that people fought over after all of that wonderful food. So everything that you guys put out was so wonderful and delicious. And when you explained to me that this was going to be done kind of in that, you know, historical way with croaker sacks on top of the fire.
Yep.
Could you just share a little bit about how you all have come to maintain those recipes and, you know, share this way of cooking and living that we haven't embraced in a number of years?
Yeah, well, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, I did like most of us do, you know, we leave home and we think that we get all the education and we know all the things that we need to know. And, you know, when I came back home, it was really interesting. I came back home in, I think it's been like 6.5, 7 years now. One of the first things that I started talking to my grandmother about was cooking, actually. Like, because being a chef, I've always had those conversations with her, but not to the level that I've done over the last probably 12, 13 years now with her. And one of the things that she reminded me of is that, you know, there's nothing new being cooked under the sun. It's just people always putting different twists to it. And she said, once you got the basics down, the rest of it just is going to make sense. And so I've applied that to what she's given me. So I remember growing up having a hot tin where a fire was built underneath a piece of tin with holes in it, oysters laid out on top of it, rinsed off and laid out on top, and then a wet croaker sack laid on it. And they would basically steam, pop open, and they're ready to rock like that. I remember we're actually going to use some of the original cast iron pots that we have some smaller ones and we have some bigger ones that were used for low country boil. So we're going to do that. We're going to use some of the cast iron that my grandmother used to make cornbread in and all of that kind of good stuff. So we've been able to maintain a lot of that also through letters, like my grandmother writing, my great grandmother, my great great grandmother writing my grandmother, and just those kinds of things, saying and using those letters to put things together, and then just asking a lot of questions. Before my Nana passed, I remember her and Javon were talking, and my Nana said, "Baby, let me take you in here. I want to show you how to do something." And I was, you know, I'm standing there and I'm like, oh my goodness, I have no idea what she's getting ready to tell this girl. And she goes, "Matthew, I want you to go out there and thrash some bushes over there and get them muscadine grapes ready." And so I'm out there thrashing the grapes, and the grapes fall down onto a clear white sheet. And I pull the sheet back inside the, pull the sheet in and put all the grapes in a big like stainless steel tub. A tin tub, and she walks over to Javon and says, "I'm going to show you how to do this, and then I'm going to give you all the crocks that I have in this house." And so she showed Javon how they used to make muscadine wine back in the day, and then she showed her how to make Applejack, which is another fermented drink also. And then next thing you know, it was pear preserves. And so her and Javon started kind of melding all of the things that my Nana knew, she kind of passed down to Javon, with me doing the peeling and all of that, of everything from pears on. And then and so that I think word of mouth has really been the way. It wasn't a lot of things written down, and so now I'm working on writing more of that stuff down, to include, we have letters from my grandmother and my great-grandmother that were written back and forth that we are now using to figure out what to plant and what time of the year to plant it, because they would talk about what they were taking to market and things like that. So I'm using that also as my farmer's almanac.
I think that is a wonderful history, such a rich history that we will be able to be a part of. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to share just a little bit. You were the executive chef at St. Simon Island Resort. What has it been like coming from being, you know, executive chef at this world-class, internationally known resort to now running your own business, growing your own food that you cook? What has that transition been like for you?
Actually, it's been a journey. I think it was the journey that I was always supposed to be on, even when I said I would never come back to the South. And I think it's a culmination of everything, that I'm supposed to be home and I'm supposed to be cooking like this, and I'm supposed to be sharing what my family has been able to do with other people. So it's been amazing. It's really been amazing.
Well, Chef, I am excited that we are going to be bringing a group from Atlanta to share your hospitality and food. Before I let you go, can you tell our listeners where they might be able to find or see you? I know that you have presented at conferences. You were on Beat Bobby Flay, your HGTV. How can they keep up with you and find you at your next event?
So you can keep up with me at farmerandlarder.com. That's FarmerandLarder.com. That's the easiest way to catch up with us. You can even see all of our jams and spice lines and all those kinds of things. If you are an avid cook at home or even want to see some of the things that we're doing, we're starting to upload recipes onto there too. And we have a subscription service that's coming out for that in 2019. So look for all those things.
And you guys do classes, events, all kinds of different things.
Oh, yeah. So we do everything from cooking classes at the restaurant. We do cooking classes at the farm. We do gardening classes and farming classes also. And we also travel, too. I mean, we just got finished doing a wedding at the Penn Center for some folks out of Atlanta about a couple of weeks ago, actually. And we've flown all the way to L.A. and have put together weddings and things like that. So we travel, and Javon and I actually met in Italy in 2012. So those are all we love to travel and we love to talk about food and do those things and probably all the things that your listeners like to do because, you know, jazz, rhythm, blues, and food always go well together.
I think that might be why I like food so much because I like jazz just as much. But Chef Rayford, I want to thank you so much. We are so looking forward to joining you on March 2nd, 2019, after the 160th commemoration of the Weeping Time in Savannah. And for our listeners who want more information, you can go to Farmer, F-A-R-M-E-R, and Larder, LARDER.com to keep up with the farmer, Shea Farmer, Matthew Rayford.
Mm-hmm.
And we will also have information coming to you before the end of the year on how you can commit to being on the trip and join us on March 2nd in Brunswick. So, Chef Matthew, thank you again. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Take care.